Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the broadcast, Evoke Therapy Program's broadcast. It is August 16th, 2018, and tonight we're talking about letting go of outcomes. And while I've had several broadcasts in the past that have addressed this, I've never dedicated a full webinar to this topic. I like to think about what I'm seeing with people in the field, with clients, with the therapists that I'm working with, and see what theme feels most relevant to me right now. And this is one of those. As is very often the case, some of this comes from my own personal experience. In fact, most of what I teach, it comes to me because I've had the same struggle. There's very little that I'll talk about, very little that I can say anything of worth to anybody about if I myself have not struggled with it in some way, some kind of related way. So letting go of outcomes is really fresh for me right now, and I want to get into it. Let's talk about where it comes from, this desire to control outcomes, right? It doesn't come from a bad place. It doesn't come because we have bad intentions in any way. But it comes from a place that needs our attention, that needs some work. And first and foremost, it comes from fear and control, right? Our desire to get what we want. And the tough thing about it is that our children, in the case of our children, and usually that this fear and control is not isolated in just one area of our life. While it might be peaked in that area, it's not the only area where it shows up in our life. Our children give us really good reason to want to control them, right? It could be anything from just not functioning very well to all the problems that get them sent to a program like Evoke. Substance abuse, cutting, depression, anxiety, eating issues, right? Any of those things, school refusal, any of those things can trigger in a parent a desire to control. And control has worked for us, right? It's part of what so many of us employed as young people to get out of the dilemmas that we were in, right? If you grew up in a family that wasn't there for you in certain ways, didn't provide the nurturing, the care, the connection, perhaps it was chaotic, maybe even abusive in some way, then we learned very early on that if we didn't try to control things, if we didn't control everything, then everything wasn't going to work out for us. So it comes from very, very honest places. And then you add on top of that our history, you add on top of that our children's struggles, and it's going to show up in bright and loud ways in our lives. Another way that control shows up in our life is that we're successful, right? If you're successful in your career, academics, right, other areas of your life, and in many cases, your ability to control things, right, to get people to do what you want them to do, to get the product to come out the way that you wanted it to come out, right? All of that history, all of that success predisposes you to, of course, apply that at home with child rearing, right? I'm good at what I do. Therefore, I'm going to take that model home. I find, of course, we have a very unique niche, which is going to have this a similar kind of theme in it. But so many of our families, what it comes down to as a message between the child and the parents is this. The child is essentially saying, it's not going to work at home. This management style might work for you at work, might work for you and other places in your life, but it's not working for me. And so not only is it not working, but I'm going to exacerbate that message. I'm going to make that message even louder by struggling, by getting into trouble. So our ability, our resourcefulness in other areas of our lives tends to lead us to this idea of bringing it home. You know, if it worked for you as a child, meaning that your parents had those same kind of ways of parenting, those controlling, more oppressive, more emotionally provocative ways of getting you to do what they wanted you to do, if it worked for you as a child, or if it worked for other children in your family, right? So many of our parents will say it's essentially the same parenting that I've applied to all of my children, the fact that it doesn't work for this one is about them. And in some ways, that's true. Of course, it's about them. But in some ways, it's our inability to see the individual and the individual's needs, let alone the concept that I've heard that I believe to be true, that no two children grow up in the same home. You know, it's different for everybody. And part of that, of course, is what they bring to the table, even if they're twins for that matter. So it might work in certain circumstances. And then the answer is, what's the harm, right? If I can get through virtually any means necessary, if I can get what I want, what's the harm? And that's a fair question that we'll talk about tonight. We'll talk about the difference between the short game and the long game, and which one we're in it for. You know, I'll say this before I go to the next topic, the next slide, and that is this. So many times, not always, but so many times when I'm working with a parent, we discover together that what a parent is trying to give to the child is something that they lacked as a child themselves, something they didn't get. And oftentimes, that desire to give to the child what you didn't get leads to this process of manipulation and power struggle. The child senses unconsciously what the value is that you're trying to give to them. Maybe, I'll use a simple for example, if you didn't feel heard as a child. So what would a parent be tempted to do in their parenting if that were their childhood wound? Is over-listen, meaning that whatever the child feels, whatever they want, when they're upset, the parent basically abandons self and gives the child anything that they want or need. Any feeling that the child holds, excuse me, any feeling that the child has holds the parent hostage, because again, it's triggering that old wound. They see themselves in the child, not feeling heard, not feeling listened to, not feeling understood. And when the child expresses that, the parent comes apart. So a little bit of a side note to that. So what's the effect of this controlling starting point, right? This place where we come into it with fear, a real earned fear, and our attempts to control it. Well, first and foremost, we turn our children into behaviors and not children. Right? It's very important, and our children's behaviors do a really good job of distracting us. That's in part what they are meant to do, right? If you're talking about drugs with your child or eating issues or school problems, you're not talking about insecurity, fear, pain, hurt, sadness, grief, right? So the problematic behaviors serve to distract everybody, the child first and foremost, and then everybody, about what's really going on, what needs to be addressed. So we turn our children into behaviors. Another way of thinking about it is we turn our children into objects, right? That reflect back our worth, our goodness as a parent. I don't know that any of us are immune to this. I know that I can fall into this hole. I think I have a special place for this, because when I'm parenting, I have this parenting book. I'm a parent educator, right? I run programs for adolescents and young adults. So surely I must be the paragon of health as a parent. I don't know if anybody else puts that on me, but I put that on myself, right? It takes work and practice, a mantra and meditation to not take that on myself, not live according to that. So, and to not turn my children's successes and failures into evidence of my goodness or badness in the process. When children become objects, we don't see them, we see ourselves and our worth reflected back at us. Of course, power struggles doesn't happen in all cases, right? Just as, I didn't write this, but just as common as a power struggle, right? A defiant child, and maybe more insidious, is a child who completely abandons themselves when a parent controls, dominates, right? They might look cooperative. They might comply. But they lose important aspects of a developing self. Emotional differentiation lacks in these relationships. Emotional differentiation is the balance between self and other, right? I show up in the relationship as authentic as possible, and I make a place for yourself so that it's safe for you to be authentic as possible, and we connect in that way. You know, so many people talk about connection like it's this positive, warm, and fuzzy thing. Connection is painful, excruciating, terrifying, difficult. If connection were all fun, all warm and fuzzy, we wouldn't need therapists. We for sure wouldn't need couples or marital therapists. That's for sure. So it's a very arduous and difficult process to develop that over time. It's absolutely worth it. It's a striving that I have, that I think most everybody has, but it's difficult. Shame, intimidation, guilt, fear, and other forms used quite effectively, I might say, in the short run, have negative long-term effects on the development of self. You know, I think the hardest thing for me, even today, is that shame gets the outcome that I want, or intimidation gets the outcome that I want. And what I like about my family is my wife and my children are very verbal about talking about when I shame them. And usually it's just in a tone of voice, in a question, why did you do that? It really doesn't mean, why did you do that? It means, you idiot. What idiot would do that? Right? And I can give you other examples of sarcasms that are subtle. So it gets what we want in the short term, but doesn't produce the long-term goals of helping a child, nurturing a child's self. What's the cost of compliance, right? You know, when you hear the word in therapy, resistance, most people picture or imagine defiance, right? Most people would probably even say resistance is somewhat synonymous with defiance, oppositionality. One of the most difficult forms of resistance is compliance. I found that in my family, with my own children, and I found that in my group. I tell the joke all the time that when staff would come to my group, they would initially say, you know, your group is so easy compared to some of the other groups because everybody does everything you say. Because I got the very therapy savvy, very smart, very capable, people would call them manipulative kids. That was my kind of my niche. Don't ask me why I related to those kids. But staff would come initially and say, gosh, your group is so easy because everybody does everything you say. And that after a few rotations, a few weeks in my group, it was not uncommon for them to approach me and say, your group is the hardest group because everybody does what you say, right? Compliance isn't the goal. Compliance or cooperation, or think of it as doing the next right thing, those aren't the goals. Those are what happen when the goals are met, right? When somebody heals, when somebody comes to terms with their wounds and does some healing and some feeling and some grieving, whatever they need to do, they're not at odds with the universe. They're not at odds with everybody. They don't need to prove anything because they've healed the wound that told them that they weren't enough, that they weren't good, that they weren't worthy. And then, of course, if we just focus on behaviors, we fail to listen to the behavior, what the behavior is trying to tell both our children and us, right? It's so... One of the ways this happens is when a person asks a why question that is not a question. Why are you doing that? Why would you do that? Instead of, tell me more. You're upset. You're scared. You lashed out. I want to understand what's going on. On the one hand, you're doing something that doesn't seem to be leading to the goals that you say that you want, but somewhere it's got to make sense. I want to learn from that. I want to learn what's going on. I want to learn what's not working out in this situation, in your life, in this relationship? You know, I speak sometimes to groups of people, individuals, where their children are younger, and they'll ask me a version of the question, tell me, Brad, what to do so that my child doesn't end up in your program. And the short answer is, first and foremost, don't ask that question. You know, don't try to keep your child out of our program. Don't try to control for that. And if your child ends up in your program, I'll be saying a similar thing to you. I'll be talking about the opportunity, the gift, the lesson, the wisdom, the treasure that is in this part of the journey, that you're not off track, that life is bringing you to this point, that it's not broken or lost, but it's a road that you didn't anticipate. If you approach it that way, everything opens up for you. And so you don't try to keep your children out of wilderness therapy. You try to be the most effective, assertive, clear, authentic, courageous, healthy, humble, vulnerable, honest parent that you can be. That's what you do. And again, controlling for outcomes. I think about sports analogies, you know, throwing a baseball, hitting a tennis ball while you play tennis, right? Hitting a golf ball. The thing that often gets in the way of accuracy is actually control, holding on tighter. While I have more experience in those areas, I'm sure it has the same to do with other things like art, right? I know it has something to do with writing. When I let go of writing a good book or a book even, is when I could write. I just wrote. You know, if you're nervous playing tennis, you have a couple of bad shots or it's match point, all of you who've played it know that that does not usually tend to lead to greater strength and accuracy with your swings, greater power and accuracy. It doesn't lead that way. So letting go is trusting your swing. Letting go is trusting your shot. I've told this story before. I read a book that my son, who's an artist, he gave me a book called Art and Fear. It was fantastic. And one of my favorite stories in there was from these two teachers. And they did this experiment. They shared this experiment in one of their classrooms where the teacher said at the beginning of a ceramics course that he split the class up arbitrarily. And he said, this half of the class over here, you're going to be graded on the amount of work you put out this semester. I'm going to put all of your work, all of your finished products on a scale, and I'm going to give you a grade accordingly. Over on this side of the room, you're going to only have to turn in one assignment, and that's going to be your grade. And of course, the end of the semester comes, and invariably with this experiment, the best works of art came from the side of the room where they produced mass amounts, right? There was no fear. Fear is the enemy of art, creativity. In psychology, we would say response flexibility, our ability to adapt and make thoughtful responses. Fear is the enemy of those things. Fear is the enemy in a lot of areas in our lives. It needs to inform us. We should pay attention to it, learn from it, what it has to teach us, but not be led by it, not live by it, not swim in it, not hand it over to everybody else in our lives all the time. A new sensibility. You know, one of the challenges I have in my work, my teaching, is that I have the eight tools. I have some things like that where we go over different steps of communication. Some of that's in my book, of course, but by and large, the most important part of my work is the underpinning, this new way of thinking. And that's why I often teach by telling stories and examples to show this way of thinking. And because some people, especially early on, if you're newer to this program, some people, especially early on, are confused by it because they conflate, right? They confuse things like passiveness and inactivity with letting go. Well, I'm not going to be passive. I have a responsibility here. I can't do nothing. Passiveness, inactivity, inaction, is not letting go of the outcome. Letting go of the outcome is active, assertive, courageous, kind, honest, authentic. Right? It's all of those things. People ask me, we encourage all of you to go to 6 12-step meetings, 6 Al-Anon, any combination of Al-Anon, CODA, or Families Anonymous. You can go online, find a meeting. People are often confused, especially when they go to Al-Anon, because the groups can tend to be certain populations that might not match up with yours. Al-Anon might have a preponderance of spouses or ex-spouses of alcoholic partners. And so parents will walk away from that and say, that doesn't really fit. Not only is it not my spouse, but my child might not even use drugs or alcohol. But the reason that we invite you to go there is because there's a certain kind of sensibility in there. And then really the sensibility is, how can I be in relationship with other people? At the most basic level, what does it mean to be in a healthy and authentic relationship with other people? Now, the reason that these groups are designed to help people who have struggling loved ones is because other people won't show up there. If everything seems to be going well, people won't work on themselves, right? Because it's working. Why would you work on something if it's not broken? It's only our struggling children that for many of us would compel us to show up at a therapist's office or at one of these 12-step meetings. And when you have a child who's in pain or in danger, you'll walk into some rooms that you might not otherwise walk into. But the sensibility they're talking about, they're telling stories about, what it's like to be in another person who's struggling. And everybody's struggling. I had a friend tell me recently that he didn't feel heard by a lot of people, that he was feeling shut down by a lot of people telling him that when he expressed his opinion or his feeling, people were trying to talk him out of it. And I said to him, with as much emphasis as I could, I said, not only am I sure that that's happening, but I think it's probably happening 10 or 20 or 50 times more than you can even see. Most people are trying to control other people, right? If you don't believe me, tell somebody you don't like a certain food like asparagus or broccoli or Brussels sprouts. And watch when you do that, say that 10 times, and watch how people respond. We all know and we can all chuckle about the fact that it's very rare that you'll say, I don't like broccoli, and everybody says, okay. But somebody's there to try to get you to try it. Try it with bacon. Try it with extra cheese. Try it cooked this way or that way. Have you had it in a protein shake before? Right? And so if it happens with our broccoli, right? It's happening everywhere. What we think about a movie, what we want to do on Saturday night, what we're comfortable with politically or in conversation, right? There's very few things that people don't try to control other people. It gives us some sense of stability and serenity if we can control something outside of us. And of course, the deeper, harder work is to control inside of us. When people come, for example, to our intensives, when people come to our program for that matter, but specifically our Finding You intensives, I'll stick to that. There's a level that many people get to. I think everybody can relate to this, that you leave there and you say, gosh, I want my husband to go to this, or I want my wife to go to this, or my mother, my brother, my sister, my son, my daughter. That's true of, I think, most people. And that's one level. The next level that I see people get to is when they say, I can't wait to go home and say I'm sorry. I can't wait to go home and be more supportive, be more patient, be more loving, be more able to support my spouse who is the identified patient, perhaps, the alcoholic, or my child who's the alcoholic, or whatever it is, they're the identified patient, but I want to see if I can be there to support them in a more loving, compassionate way without sacrificing myself. So the Al-Anon question, the coming away question is about how to be in relationship with other people. Understand that the magic isn't in the skill or the technique, but in the sensibility through which you participate with others, right? The way you see relationships, you. Parent education doesn't change children, it changes parents. And that change can have a powerful impact on the family. A client shared with me recently after practicing some things that she had learned in Al-Anon and from our work together. She had several conversations with her children, different points in time. And she came to me and said, it's like magic. It actually works. And in none of those conversations was her goal to get them to see something different in their lives, but rather to take off her own armor, to own it, to show up vulnerable. So what letting go people do, people that let go, they tell the truth more often. They're more honest. Because if you let go of the outcome, what somebody thinks, feels, if you let go of trying to convince somebody to think or feel something, you're more apt to tell the truth. People that let go assert their needs clearly. This is what I need for myself. They develop boundaries. This is what I'm not willing to do. This is where I'm not willing to go. They make letting go a practice and realize that it comes to them honestly. This other way of being, this controlling way of being, comes to them honestly. So they look at themselves compassionately, but they make it their practice to let go and let go. They make knowing themselves a priority. I've got to know myself, my wounds, my blind spots, my trauma, my inner voice, my self-esteem, my insecurity, my triggers, right? The red flags of my relapse. They make knowing themselves a priority. They stay on their side of the street. Again, that doesn't mean you don't interact, and especially in the case with their children, it doesn't mean that you don't set boundaries with them. It doesn't mean you don't have consequences. But you do it from a clear place of healthy, assertive, honest, courageous self-care, healthy boundaries. They follow through on promises, commitments, and the boundaries, the limits that they set in their life. They don't issue hollow threats. Because the difference between a threat, in this way of thinking, the difference between a threat and a boundary that you assert is that a threat is meant to get the other person's behavior to change, whereas a boundary is just informing them this is where you stand and what you're willing to tolerate or not. The next one, it says fear. It's supposed to be feel. They feel deeply. They feel deeply, honestly, and courageously. They feel their feelings. It's part of their ethic, part of their life practice. They make the core values. You know, for me, one of the ways that I get back in line with this idea of letting go is I ask myself before I have an interaction, what's my long-term goal in this situation? You know, with my children, it's to have an open relationship, an honest relationship, loving relationship, right? And supporting them to be their best self. If that's my goal, I'm going to make different decisions. Behavior in the moment is going to be less important than those goals. People that let go face their own dragons. What are the things that get in the way of me doing this work, living this way? What are the messages that I'm carrying around that say it's not okay to say no? Or that I have to be right? Or that I have to win? Or that I can't just take care of myself? What are those messages? Where did they come from? And they do battle with those dragons. They demonstrate vulnerability and they don't blame others, right? So many parents have been reluctant over the years to write the letter of accountability to themselves. Like, this is the ways that I screwed up. Worried, in many cases, that their children will use it against them. If you do it in this way, you don't do it for the other person. You do it for you. You do it to let go. You do it as a gift. And the other person can't really use it against you because It'll just go right through you. Well, Dad, you smoked pot when you were young, or, you know, Dad, you said that you get triggered. Your fear comes up for you when you don't see me doing what you did, whatever it is. It doesn't work. It just doesn't work. It doesn't matter. Because I'm not trying to convince you to live a certain way. I'm just telling you how I'm going to live. And to be in relationship with me, and for it to work, this is the way that it's going to be. We're going to work on honesty. We're going to work on emotional vulnerability. I don't have to be right. I don't have to be better than. I don't have to win. People who let go take care of themselves. It is a priority. And it's hard. And they make their serenity their responsibility versus giving your fear and anxiety to your children, right? That idea that I'll tell you, my child, all of my fears, all of my anxieties, my worries. They come from a place of love, I tell myself. So I'm going to give them to you so you'll stop doing the things or start doing the things that you need to do in your life so that I feel better. That's what I mean by that. And what you get often, not always, if there's no guarantee of this, you get what you wanted in the first place. When I do this work with therapists and supervision, because I do that, it's called countertransference. I help therapists work through their countertransference with the client, their relationship with the client. Sometimes they'll say to me, but Brad, we get paid to facilitate change. Parents will come to me and say, but I have a responsibility, but it's my duty, so forth and so on. And my response is, I'm not telling you this because it doesn't work. This works. It really does work to show up in this new way, to let go. To let go to the fact that it might fail. To let go to the fact that you might not get what you want, but that you're going to work on these core values, principles, ideas, concepts. And that it's your work. What you get is connection, or the possibility of connection. You get a meaningful, much more meaningful life. Like a lot of the parents who have gone through our program tell us all the time, the intervention was great. My son or my daughter got such and such out of your program, but it changed my life. It set me on a new course. Relationship with a higher power, perhaps, is improved, because if you're letting go and you have a relationship with a higher power, then you trust that it'll be okay. Or at least radical acceptance, right? That my circumstances are here to teach me something, to teach me a lesson. I have a friend in recovery who said to me one time, the biggest difference between me and God is God doesn't think he's me. So for a lot of us, that idea that we have to be God, we have to be in control of everything. We have to be all powerful, all knowing. And then, of course, the result is less fear, less anxiety, less anger, and less depression for the parent, for the person in Al-Anon. The outcome of good parenting is not well-behaved children, but rather peace, serenity, confidence, clarity, and the possibility of connection. Quite commonly, at the end of a presentation or communication on consequences, a parent will say, but I think I've done all of this. I'm not perfect. But I've done all of this and none of it worked. So let's explore this question. What if you do everything right, quote unquote, and it still doesn't work? It's critical to remember that it's not about you. Healthy parenting is its own reward. It creates a better life for you and for your family. As I have said, being a healthy parent means being a better mother, father, brother, sister, and friend, a better person. This is the goal of healthy parenting, to be the best parent and human being that you can be. But the measure of that is in your own personal serenity, even when your children continue to struggle. This is what we know. Those of us who have treated individuals struggling with addiction and mental health issues, this is what we know. I will tell you that there are at times in the self-help and psychological field an opposite message, I believe. There are paint by numbers. There are, if you follow this plan, your children will turn out all right. You've got to have firm boundaries. My way of thinking is, you know, it's not about having the firm boundary. Firm boundaries is the outcome of this new way of thinking, right? But there are books out there that suggest to you, you follow this equation and you'll get the outcome that you want. And while it's dressed up in therapeutic language, it's still the same message that we're trying to get away from. In Al-Anon, you learn you didn't cause it, you didn't cure it, and you can't control it. So what are the take-home messages? That this process is about you finding yourself, and that's a lifelong process. And in part, that means exploring your wounds and your history. Like Alice Miller says, and I quote her all the time, the only enduring weapon we have against mental illness is the discovery of our unique history. This is about learning to be in relationship with an other, right? It's hard to be in relationship with other people, people that are different, that believe, feel, act differently than we do. Remember that fear is the enemy. It can and should inform you. It has value. But it needn't control you and drive everything you do. And then finally, learning to practice embracing the place you're in, the journey that you're on, and then you have access to the treasures that journey has to offer. All right, I'm happy to get to any topic-related questions, and then after the announcements, I'll take some more. Like I said earlier, we want all of you to go to 6 12-step support groups. Any combination of Al-Anon, CODA, or Families Anonymous. Just go to their websites, find meetings in your area. 6 of those while your child is with us. If you haven't started now, just try it 6 times. See if it fits for you. It's free. NAMI.org is another place you can go to for affordable resources, lessons, and education. All of these broadcasts are available through the podcast app on your iPhone or iOS device. Just go to the podcast app and search Evoke Therapy Programs. You can download them and listen to them when you're out of Wi-Fi range. On your Android devices or on a computer, download the SoundCloud app on an Android or go to soundcloud.com and search Evoke Therapy Programs. On Twitter and Instagram, we're available at Evoke Therapy. On Facebook, you can search Evoke Therapy Programs. Find the Evoke Family Foundation on Facebook if you want to become involved in an organization that helps people that can't afford therapy. You can also go to our blog to find unique content each week. My book, The Journey of the Heroic Parent, is available on Amazon. It's really what all of this is about. It's also available, an audio version is available there too. The next workshop that we would like all families to go to, if possible, the next one is September 22nd and 23rd. So talk to your therapist, see if it's a good fit for you. See if it's a good timing for a visit. Experiential, field work, get to meet the staff, multi-families, really connected. Contact Gail at evoketherapy.com for more information or to our RSVP. If you want to do a deep dive into your work, you want to explore yourself and come away fulfilled and with a sense of hope, finding you. The next one is until October 17th through 21st. We also do custom intensives for families and couples. So to find out more of those, go to our website or email intensives@evoketherapy.com. The next parent support group, I'll see you in Los Angeles on Sunday afternoon from 4 to 7. In the Bay Area, I won't be there, but we're going to have one of our therapists come Monday, August 27th, 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. And in New York City, Monday, September 10th, 7 to 9 p.m. Email melanie@evoketherapy.com for more information. If you want therapy light, therapy fun, adventure program, custom made for you and or your adult children, look at our websites and look at the Pursuits program. All right, I'm happy to address any live questions that have come in. What things should I watch out for to avoid engaging in codependent behavior with my kids, my spouse, my friends? You know, I think for me, it's different for everybody. I look at obsessive thinking. If I'm focused on them changing, and I'm tying my serenity, and I don't mean that as a woo-woo word. I just mean if I'm tying my peace of mind to them changing, then I'm not letting go of the outcome. If I am focused more on, see, boundaries work, and if you're letting go, boundaries work whether the child does it or not, right? Think about it in a marriage. When you say to your spouse, I can't have this drinking in my life, you can keep drinking, but here's my boundary, my consequence. And that says, you're not trying to stop him or her from drinking. You're just saying, I can't live with it. With your child, it's not about, you know, divorcing them, but it's about saying, you can do this or not. But here's my boundary. It's the old example that I would give. I've seen it in the field many times when people set up an expectation and then try to manipulate the person to do it. The simple example I always give is it's like saying to your children, you know, eat all of your chicken, your peas, and you can have a scoop of ice cream for dessert. That's okay. But then what a lot of us do is we say, now come on, it's chocolate chip, it's your favorite. Okay, I'm going to eat it all. Come on, do it. We yell, we do everything we can to try to get them to do it instead of saying, you can skip school if you want, but here's going to be the fallout from that. So focusing on other people changing, obsessing for me about tying my serenity, my peace of mind to them changing, thinking about whether my boundaries are about healthy, assertive self-care versus trying to manipulate and change others. Those are some of the things that come up for me. But again, the answer to the question is what can you watch for? It's kind of learning this sensibility, right? It's swimming in this water because you've been swimming in a different kind of water your whole life. All of us have. So we go to Al-Anon or CODA or therapy or listen to the podcasts or the webinars. We listen to think, to hear about this way of thinking that's different than what we were taught. What first step would you recommend to someone as they start the journey of letting go? I would say go to Al-Anon, go to CODA, go to Families Anonymous. Just listen. Listen to other people that are farther along than you. Listen to other people that have more time at dealing with a child who's struggling or a family member or a loved one that's struggling, and listen to what they have to say. Listen to how they navigate it, how they cope with it. You could also read the book Codependency No More by Melanie Beatty. That's a good first step. Listen to some of the broadcasts that I've done on codependency. And again, conflating codependency with healthy support or taking care of somebody in a healthy way or being nurturing or giving. People conflate those two. They don't want to give up that part of themselves that is nurturing and giving. And neither do we. Letting go people in recovery from codependency are not mean. They're not less nurturing. They're just more clear, right? And when they give without expecting in return. They don't take care of themselves indirectly through other people and how they decide and how they treat them. Can you please briefly go over the slide before heroic parenting again? I need to really focus on that message. Let me scroll back to it and see if I can find it. Let's see. The outcome of good parenting is not well-behaved children, but rather peace, serenity, confidence, clarity, and the possibility of connection. So good parenting doesn't necessarily lead to well-behaved children. It leads to a whole bunch of other things that are wonderful and have wonderful impact on our children and our families. And then someone offers, thank you for tonight's topic. Very timely. Needed the reminders. Glad you are back doing the webinars. Thank you. You bet. Absolutely. Our son left Evoke about 10 weeks ago and is in aftercare. He is very committed to his victim stance, his victim mindset, claiming he is in jail and powerless. interested in how to answer the accusation that we are holding him captive and he has no control over the situation. He turns 18 in 5 months, and he said he intends to walk at that time. He is not progressing in his work, in high school work, toward graduation. How do you suggest we speak to him without telling him what he should do? It's a great practical question. Let me give you an example of what you might say. You might say something like, we might be wrong. We have our own self-doubt about this. And if it's the wrong thing, I'm sorry. If it doesn't work for you, I'm sorry. And I'm just not willing to do nothing. And I want to hear how you're feeling. I want to hear what's going on for you, what it's like for you. I want to understand. And I'm going to have to make a decision as the parent. I can't not decide, because not deciding is deciding. And I'm not willing to do nothing. And so what the communication is not about, here's why I'm right, here's what you should do. I could challenge his victim mindset. I could challenge his jail time mentality, for sure. Try to talk him out of it, debate with him. But you don't push against that. You just, okay. I mean, there's a lot of logical responses to the idea that he has no control. And I could go over them and give them to you, and I've used them. At moments of weakness, I've argued with my clients, with my students, with my children. But that's not this place. That's not this place. So just don't be right. Just be you. Just hold a boundary. Just say this is your best guess. This is what you're comfortable with. And you hope he figures it out. And by the way, if you are screwing up, if it is a mistake, let's even take it to the extreme. Let's say, and this isn't true, let's say you were purposely abusing him. It still would become his job, his responsibility in his life to let go of that anger, to work through it. Right? That would still be shackles that he would self-impose on himself if he held on to that. And I'll say one last thing before I end this, answering this question. I've said this recently. If my children, at any point in their life, after the age of 18, if they say to me that I am such a toxic influence in their life, that they would rather not have me in their life, I would tell them to run away from me. Right? If a client came to me and said, my father and my mother are toxic, being around them makes me miserable. They try to control me, dominate me. They're punitive. They're shaming. They're judgmental. Whatever it is. I would support them in saying, go to a place where you can be healthy. Where you can be okay. So when a child threatens me with running away, my response is, if being around me hurts you, ruins your life, please run away. And don't listen to my whining and complaining about it. That would be for me. Take care of yourself. I want you to. I support you. I believe in that. Spent my life trying to help others do that for themselves. All right, folks, thank you for joining us tonight. Thank you for and on behalf of your children. I think showing up to these webinars, listening to these podcasts, if it tells me one thing, it tells me that you're willing to look at yourself, because that's what we talk about on these podcasts. So for and on behalf of your children, thank you for being willing to do your work. And I hope these points of contact are helpful for you. Take care and have a great weekend. I'll talk to you on Monday. Bye-bye.